You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, welcome back, everybody. It's November 20th. I'm James Edwards, and it's been a pleasure, of course, over the course of the last month to weigh in and offer commentary on these trials. I'd be lying to you, though, if I didn't tell you that I was looking forward to all of this being over. Next week will be beyond Thanksgiving, and the countdown to Christmas will begin, and we'll be starting to play that great Christmas music that we do every year in that month leading up to the birth of our Savior Jesus Christ. So that'll begin next week, and it'll be a little bit lighter, and these verdicts will be in, and it'll all be done. It's a tragedy that a case such as Charlottesville was ever even brought, or at least brought against the people who were the victims, the true victims. We'll see how the countersuits go, but in any event, I had the opportunity to appear twice on Sam Bushman's radio program, Liberty Roundtable, this week to break down the Charlottesville trial after what happened in it this week. After one of the appearances, our good friend Rick from South Brooklyn sent me a text message and said that it was a stone-cold analysis. So I'll see if I can offer you a stone-cold final assessment on this, and next week we'll tell you what the final verdicts are, but I don't think there'll be a lot more commentary on it. We've said all that needs to be said and really all that can be said. But we will tell you how it all wraps up, of course, and then we'll continue on with our work. The world will still turn, and God will still be in control of the universe, and life goes on. After the plaintiffs rested their case, the plaintiffs' attorneys, Chris Cantwell and Richard Spencer asked for the case to be dismissed because, of course, in our opinion, they didn't prove their case, that there was a premeditated conspiracy to commit racial violence. And, of course, the judge ruled against that and objected, didn't sustain the motion, saying, and I quote, "You don't have to do very much to be part of a conspiracy." Now, we talked about this in the first hour with Rich Hamblin and Warren Balog. When I think of a conspiracy, I think of the Vannsee Conference. There was a movie that came out on the Vannsee Conference called Conspiracy, wouldn't you know it? And it came out in 2001. It's actually very well acted. The Vannsee Conference, if you're unfamiliar, is the alleged conference when members of the German government in World War II met together to plan the murder of untold millions. And don't you just know that they wrote it all down, they typed it all out and made sure the Allies found it after the war. But it stars Kenneth Branagh as Reinhard Heydrich, and Stanley Tucci as Adolf Eichmann, and Colin Firth as Wilhelm Stuckart. It's a very well-acted movie. But that's what I think of when I think of a conspiracy. I think of people meeting together. I think of people actually conspiring to do something. That was, of course, not what this was by any stretch of the imagination. Now, for 15 days of the prosecution's case, we heard them basically recite reckless and offensive words. But they did land some punches in the last day or two. They had someone named, last name of Daly. I haven't heard of him before, but he admitted that he had hit Antifa protesters and not in self-defense. Does one person out of 5,000 prove the case? No, it's a random incident. But they were able to bring up enough edgy comments and threats made in jest to muddy the waters. Does it prove that there was a conspiracy? No. But combined, if you're a normie juror, does it give you reasonable doubt that perhaps it was? I don't know. That's what we're going to find out. They don't know these people. I don't think it was by any means a convincing case by the plaintiff's attorneys, but they may have done enough to get some money doled out to the jury, by the jury. Some defendants made it harder on themselves by saying things that were quite unnecessary in Discord chats and on other podcasts and things like that. I did hear some things read that were absolutely said by some of the co-defendants last week that I had never heard before. Did they conspire in the way that the left does? No, not even close. But there is a double standard, and they have to know that. You have to know that there is a double standard. Yes, Antifa and BLM can burn down the cities. They can kill people. They're not going to be held accountable for it. You will, if you're a dissident, you will be held for even a joke you tell in the privacy of your own home if somebody's recording it. You've got to know that there's a double standard. You have to be above reproach. BLM and Antifa does worse. Every day, crime and violence follows them everywhere they go. They threaten people. They're much more violent. People who share the beliefs of those who oppose the Unite the Right rally literally burned 100-plus cities last year. They have a much higher body count. But we understand that they're allowed to do that. We're not. We have to be accountable for what we say and do. They do not. You have to understand that. We talked about the SLAPP lawsuit. No need to revisit that. Warren mentioned that in the first hour. Hindsight's 2020, but we all engage in a little Monday morning quarterbacking. I think that the net was cast too wide to get the maximum number of attendees at UTR. The Torchlight rally was unnecessary. The objective of the demonstration was to be a show of support in favor of keeping the Lee Monument. That's why people like Rich Hamblin went there in Charlottesville. The Torchlight rally was done to trigger. It was done to be edgy. It was done to get media attention. I've always been very selective in the media that I grant access to me. I've always been selective in the interviews that I grant and the ones that I turn down. But there was a lot of the thought process exhibited by others in the alt-right at the time, and I know this to be a fact because I know these guys, was that any media attention was in and of itself a victory. Anything you had to do to get media attention was a worthy means to the end. No selectivity with regard to who gave they gave access to, as I've done. That was part of the alt-right culture, was intended to trigger. There was a little bit of a lack of leadership amongst some of the people involved that day, professionalism and discipline. I've said before, don't say things you don't want read back to you in court. I think of all the people, and we're going to have him rejoin us, if not this segment, in the very next segment, Rich Hamblin was the most relatable that I heard on the stand in the whole month, the most relatable. He was there to defend the Lee Monument. Steady and poised, as I said. Many were scared to be called. There was even one person who committed suicide, we've heard, from being doxxed. So we're thankful for men like Rich who hold the line. A lot of jury fatigue. The verdict's going to come in before Thanksgiving. I'm surprised it didn't come in on Friday. Closing arguments were fine. We broke that down a little bit with Warren and Rich in the first hour. I think everybody either did fine or very well, or at the very least okay. Why was the Heafy report not mentioned? That's something that I will never be able to wrap my mind around. That was something that, wow. I just don't know. But there was no conspiracy. And here's why you know there was no conspiracy. There was no conspiracy that day by the Unite the Right to attendees to commit racial violence, because nobody could have predicted in advance that the cops were just going to sit on their hands and allow people and watch as people attacked one another. To engage in a conspiracy, you would have to expect that the cops would have allowed you to engage in such a conspiracy. Didn't happen. Wasn't going to happen. And the jury's job is going to be very difficult to differentiate. I can't even keep all of these different people separate, because I don't know them all. And if I don't know them, they're sure not going to know them. That was the part of the scattershot dragnet that the plaintiff's attorneys engaged in. And we'll see if the jury is able to sift through it. This whole thing about the conspiracy, even if it's unbeknownst to you, you can be a part of it. That's incredible. Once you're deemed to be a co-conspirator, you can be found liable for all the actions of your co-conspirators. Very convoluted verdict form, by the way. The plaintiff's attorneys are asking for over $10 million in damages. That's really all I've got to say about it. That was my ins and outs and leftover notes. We're going to get to Rich Hamblin immediately after the break. He's actually been waiting with us the whole segment. But we're going to get him at the top of this. We're going to let him put a final nail on this as well. Stay tuned.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Right. Well, hey, we got Rich Hamlin for one more segment. It's our Charlottesville Redux, and I should say, because we've gotten a comment in between the last segment and now, no, if there was any question, no, I don't take the Hollywood version, the Hollywood movie of the Vonsi Conference as if it ever even occurred as historical fact. I'm just saying the way that they portray that to us is what you could consider a conspiracy to be. In fact, that was the name of the movie. It was all done tongue-in-cheek in my example in the first segment. So I want to be clear about that. But that's what I consider a conspiracy to be, people actually coming together and sitting around a table and planning something. That was not what was done in Charlottesville, not even close. So, Rich, hey, my friend, we've been listening to this for the last month. We've been talking about it. You were there this week. What have we left out? A parting shot, because, again, when we come back next week, we will, of course, share with the audience what the verdict is. But I don't think there's much more we can say than what hasn't been said over the course of the last month. So what are we leaving on the table? How do we bring this to conclusion with regards to our commentary?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I'm hoping for the best. I'm fearing for the worst. I think some of the people are going to get hosed. I think Robert Ray, also known as Asmodor, and Eli Klein, Eli Mosley, I think they're going to take it pretty hard because they didn't respond, you know. And there's James Field, can you get blood out of a stone? Campbell is there defending the insurance company. That's what his primary job is there. So, for the other defense, I think Brian Jones probably did the best, in my opinion. Of course, I'm prejudiced there because I'm a member of the League of the South. But some of the other attorneys made questionable statements, you know, like calling their the views of their clients, reprehensible. And Edward Rebrook, the NSM guy, got up there and was quoting from another piece of propaganda, the film Inglourious Basterds, and that kind of stuff. So but I don't think the plaintiffs, they certainly couldn't prove any conspiracy, any real evidence of conspiracy. It was pretty clear that most of the defendants don't like each other, and it can hardly stand to be in the same room with each other or so much on the periphery of the events like Cantwell. The biggest thing is, though, they have to prove conspiracy to commit violence. And the judge said you had to limit damages to events that occurred in conjunction with a car crash or with the torchlight rally. And of course, the league wasn't even there for either event. So it'll be interesting to see. I didn't expect a verdict on Friday because the ballot's pretty complicated. I think it was kind of a sneaky trick of the.
It's actually very complicated. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, as Rich mentions it, you can go to my Twitter at James Edwards TPC and you can read the entire convoluted verdict form. And it's if you're confused, you can say that this defendant or that defendant was or was not responsible for damages to this or that plaintiff, and then there's a fill-in-the-blank box where you're supposed to write in a dollar amount as to how much they are liable. You can put zero. You can put – I mean, the plaintiff's attorneys were asking for millions upon millions of dollars in emotional damages and things like that. And so it is convoluted. It's going to take a little bit of time to sift through, and again – it's going to be difficult for these jurors to differentiate the different parties because even I, who've done this for 20 years, didn't know everybody. And even though I knew a lot of the personalities and a lot of the conflicts, I didn't know everybody. And if it's hard for me to differentiate, it's going to be hard for them to be sure. And that was something that you saw, Rich. And I guess, hey, look, if I'm an attorney for a particular counsel and my job is to get my clients off and they're a defendant, I don't know. I mean, if you're a counselor, do you try to blame the other defendants and not yours? There was a lot of that going on, though. I can't.
A lot of finger pointing and a lot of people trying to save their own butts. But back to the jurors, I mean, they've got to decide each defendant individually whether or not they're liable. And if they're liable, and it's got to be a unanimous vote to find somebody liable, how much damages, that they're liable for. It could be nothing. It could be a dollar. It could be, $10 million. But, I mean, it's so there's a lot of that to weigh through. I'm sure the jurors are going to, there's a lot of confusing testimony. I think the defense was kind of short. There's some things that probably should have been brought out a little more. But at this point in the trial, everybody's got fatigue. Moon's got fatigue. And Moon's got a heavy influence. He appeared to be even-handed, but I think the Western District of Virginia is probably the venue of choice for the Antifa and the left attorneys because that's the same district where Alex Jones is being sued. So and it's in Moon's court. So I think Moon kept up a good facade, but I think by the way he instructed the jury, he's pretty much shown that the fix is in. And one more word, conspiracy laws are probably the worst thing that ever happened to the United States. Now, even though this is just a civil trial and nobody's going to go to jail over it, conspiracy laws, thank you, Ronald Reagan, for signing it into law, it's the most evil things. It's in a long train of evil things that have happened in the United States. It's open to broad interpretation. You can you can convict anybody of practically any kind of conspiracy, even if they're unaware of it. So it's going to be interesting. They'll get a verdict before Thursday. I don't know if they'll get it Monday because I'm like I say, there's a lot of stuff they got to go through, and they all got to come to an agreement. I think the league's got they maybe have a good chance of not escaping, and some of the other parties there, but. I know a few people are going to go down. The jury's going to feel like they want to do,
Somebody's going to have to be served as a sacrificial lamb, and certainly the people who were sanctioned and who didn't show up and who didn't participate. I mean, it's by default they're going to get those judges.
Yeah, and I think with the reaction so far to the Rittenhouse verdict, you know, it's facts that cities haven't exploded. Portland, you know, Portland's gone off. I mean, Portland goes off for anything, you know, they're going to riot for anything. but I think that may give them encouragement that they can, you know, render a proper verdict, and without, you know, not fear their house being burned or their dog poisoned, you know?
Well, it's Portland and Seattle. Well, I'll tell you, Rich, again, I want to salute you, a brother, for going up there and doing the job that nobody else who was beaten by Antifa that day would do and tell your story, even though you didn't have to. You lived out of the jurisdiction. You went up there like a man, and you were a true son of the South. You mentioned Inglorious Bastards, though. I should mention this. This is just one of the many stories I get to tell over drinks on any given night. We have been denounced by the Bear Jew himself, Eli Roth, and that's not a pejorative. Eli Roth played the character, the Bear Jew, who beats German soldiers in the head with baseball bats for fun. It was really a revenge porn movie, very disgusting movie. But we have actually been named and denounced by Eli Roth, so of Inglorious Bastards fame. So that's you know, that you're in good company if you can say that. You're certainly in my company, and we'll toast to that if you can say you have been denounced by Eli the Bear Jew Roth.
Well, I think I told you earlier I was on a wanted poster.
I did see that. And hey,
it was too late. I was out of town before it posted.
Oh, there was just a little too late to catch you, buddy. Quick on his feet as he always is. Hey, Rich, we'll watch with interest as this thing comes to fruition before Thanksgiving. Thank you, brother, for everything, and we'll talk to you again very soon. We'll be back to close the show in the next 2 seconds. Stay tuned, everybody.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News.
I'm Brad Bernards. More than 300 lawsuits totaling a staggering $3 billion have been filed over the Astroworld disaster on November 5th that ultimately claimed the lives of 10 people. Legal experts have doubts about whether Travis Scott himself will be held financially liable for the fatalities. Alexandra Connell with Yahoo Finance.
This all comes down to what Travis said and did that night in Astroworld. And right now, there really aren't any damning allegations.
As the federal government mandates experimental COVID-19 vaccines for nearly all employees, a record 4.4 million American workers walked away from their jobs in September. According to data published on November 12th from the United States Job Openings and Labor Turnover Report, an unprecedented number of Americans in most sectors abandoned their jobs. This is USA Radio News.
At the American Veterinary Medical Association annual convention in Washington, D.C., I spoke with Dr. John Howe, AVMA president, about One Health.
One Health is really a collaboration between physicians and veterinarians or public health officials. For example, in Minnesota, our state public health veterinarian deals with zoonotic diseases, rabies, for example. Animals are sentinels for humans, and humans are sentinels for some infections in animals.
There's more valuable information at avma.org.
Maybe this is you too. A lot of people do not like their health plan right now, but great news, you're not stuck with it. There's another choice called MediShare, and it's a great option if you're self-employed or changing jobs or part of the gig economy. The typical family saves $500 a month with MediShare, and the customer satisfaction rate is double that of typical health insurance. Find out more, including how much you'll save. Just call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE.
Japan is considering releasing oil from its reserves for the first time to curb surging oil prices as Prime Minister Fumio Kishida signaled his readiness to counter oil price hikes following a request from the United States. However, Japan may struggle to justify such a move, as under its own laws, the country can release reserves only at a time of supply constraints or natural disasters, but not to lower prices. The White House on Friday released a copy of results from President Biden's first physical exam and highlights observations including his stiffened walking pattern.
They're going to release all the detail. I feel great. Nothing's changed. We're in great shape.
Biden, who turns 79 Saturday, was evaluated for his first physical since taking office by White House physician Kevin O'Connor. Biden remains a healthy, vigorous 78-year-old male who is fit to successfully execute the duties of the presidency. This is USA Radio News.
First you delay me, then you bump me. I can't wait to see what happens next.
I'm going home for Thanksgiving.
I can help get you home.
Taxi! I've got a family waiting for me.
Here we go.
I have, Diners. Pizza and a gasoline card.
Have mercy. I've been wearing the same underwear since Tuesday.
I can vouch for that.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as we approach Thanksgiving, we remember that there was a time when comedy was actually funny, and it's been a difficult month covering these three trials here, even as a political commentator and as an observer to talk about it for the last month has been unfortunate and difficult. But we are approaching Thanksgiving, which will enter us into the Christmas season, and we're all looking forward to that. And to help us sort of get back on to the lighter side of things, and I always think it's important to end a show on the lighter side of the news. It's somewhat difficult to dredge through the political cesspool for 2.5 hours, but then we get to the end, and we like to end it with a little bit of lighter fare. And Jack Ryan's great for that. Now, Jack has agreed to stand his post for the last couple of weeks in silence as we've worked through these trials, but he's back with us now. And we just heard the official trailer from his favorite Thanksgiving movie, and he's going to tell us all about it, and we'll make sense of it all. Jack, take it away.
Okay, well, that was the trailer for my favorite Thanksgiving movie, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, written and directed by John Hughes and starring Steve Martin and John Candy. The plot is of a rather, I would say he was an uptight marketing executive. He's based in suburban Chicago, and he's trying to get home from New York to Thanksgiving to get back for the holiday. And he has lots of problems getting back, and he meets this shower curtain salesman, John Candy, and he really hates him. But they have lots of adventures and just trying to get back home. And it's a very good-hearted movie. I have lots of Christmas movies that I like, but this is really the best. There's not a lot of really Thanksgiving movies that I have, but it's a great one, and they get back home, and it's positive. And they are our enemies. These cultural Marxists have tried to attack all of our holidays, the President's Day, Washington's birthdays, place of Martin Luther King Day. 4th of July has now been replaced by Juneteenth. Columbus Day is now Indigenous Peoples Day. Christmas has been attacked and supplanted by Hanukkah and Kwanzaa. But they really haven't gotten around to finding some holiday to replace Thanksgiving. It's my favorite holiday, and it's the story of British pioneers or immigrants that survived their first times in New England from Indian attacks and starvation, things like that. And we give thanks to the fact that we're doing okay here in North America. So it's my favorite holiday, and I really recommend the movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Well, it's a great movie, and they've replaced comedy with things that are certainly unfunny. And even back as late as the 80s, Saturday Night Live was still funny. You had people like Steve Martin and John Candy and some of these other actors like Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray and so many others of the top tier A-list comedians of the 80s that were very, very funny. And now, of course, if you have a late night talk show, if you're a comedian, so-called comedian, if you're not making fun of Donald Trump or whites in general, there's no jokes allowed. And of course, those jokes aren't funny. It's just reading liberal claptrap and liberal catechisms. But comedy's gone to hell.
It has gone out, but if you look hard enough, there's still some funny people. I think that traditionally the best stand-up comedians have been either Jewish or Black Americans, and there've been so many good ones, and there's still. I liked Eddie Murphy and Dave Chappelle, and what was the other one? I'm just forgetting the last one.
Well, Chris Rock. Chris Rock.
Chris,
yeah, Chris
Rock,
Rock
is
good.
Really good. And Chris Rock said, "I don't want to go to college campus anymore to try to there. These people just they're not funny. They can't take a joke." And I really sometimes think that the Taliban is more open-minded and sense of humor than these politically correct leftist people, when they're just obsessed that somewhere some regular American is having a good time, that he's enjoying a laugh or things like that. But that's not us. We do enjoy a laugh. We like good movies. We like good music, and we're not going to give up and just say, if these people that are no fun, we're not going to hang out with them. So if they say we can't tell a joke, whatever, you know, no, we can tell a joke. We can have fun. We can dance. We can appreciate a beautiful woman, and our women
are beautiful.
We can certainly
do
that. Women are ugly. Their women are really ugly. No fun. But that's it. But so we're not giving up. And humor is just it's just good for the soul, and it's a great weapon. And our enemies do not like it when we laugh and enjoy life. So we're going to laugh and enjoy life, and we're going to go enjoy a Thanksgiving. And give the middle finger and salute these our enemies and traitors and those certain people.
The lighter side, Jack, and speaking of jokes, okay, so it's a holiday week. We're approaching Thanksgiving, so things are a little bit off kilter here. And so my family came to the studio tonight, as they sometimes do. And I've got my 7-year-old son here, and they've been hanging out in the hall and everything else. But he's in here now. He's got a joke. He's been practicing. Okay, do you want to hear this joke for my son, Henry?
Yeah.
You want to hear that? Because you're part of the family, Jack. I mean, not just part of our radio family, part of the team, part of the staff, but also part of the family. You've been with
us for a while. I've seen a lot of photos of him. He looks like a very charming, mischievous young lad. So, yeah
you nailed it. A picture's worth 1,000 words, and you nailed a couple of them. All right, so here's Henry. Now, he's been working on this joke. Now, Henry, when you tell this joke to the audience, I want you to speak slowly and loudly, okay? Go slow and be loud. Now, Henry is missing his two front teeth. All right, so his tongue just comes right out of his teeth. And we're going to get a video of him singing All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth. So, you know, maybe a little bit of a lisp here, but we'll see. I believe in you, son. I know you're going to nail it, all right? So Henry's been asking to do this joke on the show for the last 2 weeks. And I said, well, you know, we're talking about some heavier stuff, so we got to wait. But now with Jack and with the lighter side, here we go. Let's see. This is Henry, and Jack's going to tell you. Uncle Jack's going to tell you if he thinks it's funny. You ready, buddy? All right, here he comes.
So I was in the line of the cafeteria. I saw a big bowl of apples. It had a note on it. It said, "Only take one. God is watching." So I went down farther, and I saw a big bowl of cookies, and I decided to write my own note. It said, "Take all you want. God is watching the apples."
All right, what do you think, Jack? Comedian to comedian, give him a grade.
I thought it was very good. And some people think it's dangerous to make jokes about God or something. But I think if it's positive, who was that guy that
He's his father's son. You know, he's going to live on the edge. That was good, buddy. You did a good job.
Yeah.
He's been waiting for 3 hours to tell that joke.
He's a charming. Good job, buddy. He's a charming guy, but he's got better hair than his father does. And so I was very happy
I got to send you a picture. I got to send you a picture. We're taking family Christmas pictures on Monday, and so my wife just took him to get his hair cut. He looks sharp. I'm telling you right now, he is a 10 out of 10 on the handsome scale.
Wow. That's fantastic.
He's got his hair cut. I'll send you a little picture in a second. He goes to the barbershop, you know, as a man should. He goes to the barbershop, not the salon.
Right.
But he was at the barbershop yesterday.
Well, good for him. Yeah, he's a charmer. We got to support our youth, and if you've got talent, good looks, you should just make the most of it, you know, because our people are better looking than our enemies,
our children, and our certainly our women. And
women are really good looking, man. Whoa, look out! Your wife and daughter are just stunning, and I'm stuck in Chicago with these ugly, mean, no fun women. I'd rather just hang out with these black gangbangers. They really look what? They're more fun than these Chicago lawyers.
You know, I marvel, Jack, every week we get another segment with you because I read about the 12 to 24 or 30 murders that take place in Chicago every week. And I was like, oh, is this the week they got Jack? We'll know if he answers the phone or not.
Well, the best defense is a good offense, is what I really have to say. So if some rap singers are just mysteriously disappearing, you might think that I might have a hand in it. It's good. The city looks beautiful. I fortunately live outside of the city, but I still own property in the city. And it's gorgeous, but it's just the most violent year in Chicago in history. And it's just,
but as you said, it's the most violent place in many ways, but it's also the most beautiful modern city with regard to architecture, according to your assessment. And I got to get up to see you up there, Jack. Of all the places I've been, and I've been a lot of places, I've not been to Chicago, if you can believe it. So we'll do it one day. I guarantee you that we're going to do it. But we got to take a break. One more segment with Jack Ryan. Great to have him back after a month off as we've been covering these trials. One more with Jack before Thanksgiving.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Regrets? Oh, we're all gonna have them. Doesn't matter who you are, what you do. At some point, you're gonna wish you'd done something differently. You know, the woulda, coulda, shouldas. But let me tell you a couple of things you'll never regret. You'll never regret spending extra time talking to your teenager. Trust me. You'll never regret answering your three-year-old's question about where the water in the bathtub comes from. And I've never seen anyone wish they hadn't sat in the kitchen laughing with their children and telling them goofy stories about when they were kids. Yeah, sure, we're all gonna have regrets, but talking too much with our kids won't be one of them.
No matter what you talk about, love is what they'll hear. A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Visit us at Mormon.org.
I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. As a teenager, I gave my first public speech in my church. My hand shook, my heart pounded. I thought to myself, I can't do this, but somehow I did, and because I wanted to talk about things that were important, I persisted. I chided my church as a senior in high school for not seeming to care about the not yet born, for looking the other way, and for not taking a stand on life.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
You know, I'm not going to be denied, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to be denied. Our studio monitor crapped out in between the break. And I'm not going to be denied being able to play this Thanksgiving song. All right, here we go. We'll do it now. We'll do it now. Nothing stops me. Although I guess, Jack, in honesty, that could be Christmas, Halloween, Thanksgiving. It could be anything because the Peanuts are that's a gang for all seasons, is it not? But I don't know. There's something uniquely fallish about that song, or at least it makes me think of the fall time. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, that was the theme, I guess, for a lot of Peanuts ones. But there were, I haven't seen him for a while, but the Charlie Brown, the Great Pumpkin, I guess he had a Thanksgiving one, too. But they're classic. I think just around Dr. Seuss, they're trying to attack, of course, all traditional children's stories. And they weren't inclusive enough, and they just, they had it. But keep the great ones around, and we don't have to consume the junk that's forced on us, and we can. And then the other thing I would have to say is if the relatives, the survivors of some classic, great children's author become woke communist stuff, so like I think the heirs of Dr. Seuss did, we don't have to be so upset about giving them the royalties and stuff. If they're going to ban the good books or something, I would say let's get an underground, and in the, you know, we don't have to give them the royalties. So, keep alive the great culture throughout, from the Greek and Roman worlds, Middle Ages, British, Russian literature. But Peanuts are tremendous. Keep your own copies of it. And they might be knocking on your door and trying to come in and say, hey, do you have a copy of, it's a bootleg copy of Charlie Brown's Christmas or the Great Pumpkin, you know, they're going to come for it. But yeah, we have to just keep alive our tradition, and we don't have to consume the junk that they force on us on through the current media. And so, you know, I gave up my cable.
Well, our good friend Rich said he that was from a Charlie Brown Christmas. He saw it when it premiered on CBS. Well, there you have it. Well, I don't know. There's something about the Peanuts theme that always makes me think about, who is it, Lucy, that pulls the football from Charlie Brown? That's always like in a fall type setting. Well, maybe I'm misremembering, but do you ever feel like Charlie Brown, Jack? Do you think whites in this country ever feel like Charlie Brown and Lucy's the government?
Lucy's the government, but she's just also a kind of an American woman that is not being supportive of American men. And that's why a lot of American boys and stuff, they might look to women from South America or something like that.
Anybody tuning into the show right now will think it's just been ridiculous the whole 3 hours. No, what we did the first 2.5 hours and the last month before that, we're covering some very difficult trials. We did it better than anybody else out there. We did it with the best guests, three of whom were actually on the stand in trial, Charlottesville, and gave testimony. All right, so we've done that. But, hey, I got to tell you, I called Jack. I said, Jack, it's the last week before Thanksgiving. You've been out the last month, so we could cover these trials. We got to come. We got to end as we go into the holiday week on something lighter. So we worked that in. That's what we're doing now. But with regards to Peanuts, and the Charlie Brown cast of characters, it was done in jest back then, you know, going back to the 70s and whenever they were in their heyday. But if you – I guess maybe it was a – sort of a premonition of things to come, but you remember Peppermint Patty? We were talking about Lucy and pulling the football from Charlie Brown, and Charlie Brown, he would always fall for it. He would always fall on his ass. That's sort of, I guess, analogous to white men. But
Peppermint Patty. He's the piano player, and then Charlie Brown's sister, I think, really likes Schroeder.
Sally likes Schroeder.
They're pretty good. I like the Peanuts, but I really also like the Muppets that they're there. I like those old guys that are in the the balcony.
That's probably the only two Muppets we can relate to are the old guys that complain about
old
everything
guys, yeah.
Because all the other Muppets are woke now. But hey, before we go to Muppets, we need to go to Muppets. I mean, that's key, and we need to do that. But one more thing about the Peanuts thing is Peppermint Patty. She had her friend Marcy, who always called her Sir, You know, of course, back then, you know, that was just a joke. That was just something to be funny. I mean, that's funny, a girl calling another girl sir, but I guess now it'd be all too serious. Am I right?
Peppermint Patty, was she like the lesbian character in that one? She sort of one.
I don't think she was actually a lesbian or intended to be, but I mean, now you could look back on it as, you know, why is this one girl calling the other girl sir? I mean, it was funny back then. I always laughed about it as a kid because it's ridiculous, as is the whole narrative about transgenderism and everything else, and use your pronouns and whatever you are, what your pronoun says you are, or whatever pronoun you think you're. But now you look back, now you watch it, it's like, oh, well, were they onto something? But anyway, I don't think so. I think it was just done to be silly. Because the whole thing's silly. The Emperor does have no clothes. But hey, let's talk about the Muppets. So I saw Big Bird came out, and Big Bird was pro-vax. And if you don't get your vax, you're not going to be a friend of Big Bird. And
Big Bird was, you know, Bert and Ernie or the Muppets.
Well, I thought they were the same thing.
No. The Sesame Street was much more of a New York liberal leftist thing, where Muppets was kind of apolitical. I don't think that. Yeah, no, Big Bird and Bern and Ernie, Sesame Street. It was much more of a New York. It was on that same era of Norman Lear that was doing all of these shows. So I'd try to stay away from Sesame Street. I thought it was propaganda for little kids. Not as bad as what we've got now, but I liked Muppets show. I thought it was great. It was fun. And I think it stood the test of time.
Yeah, I remember Muppet Babies with Animal. Animal was a Muppet. But, hey, we've been corrected by our audience. And we can always count on our audience to correct us. And that's what they're good for. And they are, you know, smarter than us. So we're lucky that we are able to serve as their voice. But we've been set straight on Peanuts. Lucy. It was Lucy who had a crush on Schroeder. Sally had a crush on Linus. Marcy was a mini Billie Jean King, and Peppermint Patty was a tomboy. So, you know, leave it to the TPC listening audience, and you'll never go wrong. I tell you, they will never let you down.
We're well read, let me down. And we are now. TV is good. Well, if I make some mistakes, I apologize, but we just have to be strong. And
I made the mistake. I mean, I thought Sally was in love with Schroeder, but Sally was in love with Linus, and Lucy had the crush on Schroeder. So, and there was no gay characters or homosexual characters in Peanuts.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, good. So, that's great.
Hey, the more you know.
Who was the musician? All I'm saying is that composed the Peanuts.
You know what? I just had it pulled up. It was an Italian trio, was it not? Hang on. We'll find that again. Do you know? Do you know, or do I need to look it up?
No, I forgot it. I forgot it.
Well, I knew it 2 minutes ago, so hang on. It was the Vince Guaraldi Trio.
Okay.
The Vince Guaraldi Trio.
There you go.
Came up with the Peanuts theme, which I think is actually called, is it called Linus and Lucy? I know somebody from our audience will tell me. I'm about to find out. I'm about to find out myself.
Your permanent collapse.
Yes, it's called. I think the actual title of the Peanuts theme is Linus and Lucy. I'm laughing now because people are commenting about the Peanuts character named Franklin. Yeah. Franklin was the diversity character in that. Yes, they did add him so they could stay on air, presumably. But anyway. Okay, hey, Jack, listen. Oh my gosh. Oh, I forgot. I don't know if I'll even have time to do it. The Thanksgiving Proclamation, we always read it. I'm not going to have time to do it. Oh, man. I can't believe we let so much monkey shines pass with Peanuts. George Washington, whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey his will, to be grateful for his benefits, and to humbly implore his protection and favor, and whereas both houses of Congress have, by the joint committee, requested me to recommend the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity to peaceably establish a form of government for their safety and happiness. Therefore, I do now recommend and assign to Thursday, the 26th day of November next, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being who has the beneficent author of all that was good, that is, and that will be, and so on and so on and so forth. Folks, I really wish I could have read the entire George Washington original Thanksgiving Proclamation to you, but it will be posted to thepoliticalcesspool.org on Thursday. So go read it. Read it to yourself. Read it to your family on Thanksgiving. Thepoliticalcesspool.org on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. Check out George Washington's Thanksgiving Proclamation. For Jack Ryan, for Rich Hamblin, for Warren Balog, for Ramsey Paul and Courtney from Alabama, I'm James Edwards. Happy Thanksgiving, Jack. Thank you for being part of the family, part of our team here at TPC. For all of you, happy Thanksgiving out there in the listening audience. We'll be back with you next week with some great Christmas music. Can't wait for that. The countdown to Christmas is on. We'll be here for it. Stay tuned.